Hey, everybody, welcome to a special edition of the Rethink Podcast. I'm coming to you live from the Rocky Mountain Men's Summit. Yeah, so we're wrapping up 3 days up here where we have just taken a deep dive into what God wants for our lives and great discoveries about not so much behaviors, but identity. Would you agree with that? Identity, and the main one being, I am a son of God, right? Last night, we had 25 men. I just call it underwear baptism, and it's like that's how we came into the world, kind of, and right? So it was really, really good. So you guys have been processing a lot, because we took a deep dive starting on Friday night, and we just stayed down deep the whole time. So if stuff's come up for you, this is the time to ask those questions. So I got Matt down here who is involved in coaching and leadership and mind, body, spirit connection. I got Brad Lominick who is a developer of leaders, calling leadership out of people that don't even know they were leaders because they've never identified it. They've misidentified it. It's like, you know, I sit in your session. Yes, I got Rourke, Commander Rourke Denver here, who's very soft-spoken and quiet, and and turn your cell phones off because he's packing and he'll kill you. And he was commander in the SEALs 20 years, and he's been a great teacher. And then got Jason Martinkus here who went deep into what's broken in us, especially around intimacy and sexuality and connecting dots that we never even thought connected for me anyway. And then Chris Mosier, also known as Yoda. If you've ever been on a weekend with him, he runs Liminal Weekends and Soul Work for Men, and it's been a life changer for me. So we have about 40 minutes to do this, and so we'll just get started with any... What are the questions that have come up for you? And then I'll point at you, and then you say the question, I'll repeat it, and it can be for anybody. All right, it's not for me. All right, you get to hear from me all the time. So who wants to kick us off? The hurt, yes, I can, and that's in the next session. Okay, and that's what I'm going to talk about the whole time, about this movement that we're going to be a part of. Great question, though, yeah. So the hurt was that the question about this, and we're going to get to that. So I'm excited about it. Next. Up there, yep. That's you.
This is for that space in leadership. What would be your advice?
And that was left-handed. Yeah, I mean,
let me repeat that, right? Yeah, or do you understand it?
Yeah, I think it. The question is there's a tremendous amount of, in particular, team guys, SEALs that have leadership and programs and information they're passing. How do you wade through that to get to authenticity or the right person to listen to? Yeah. I will never talk poorly about another team guy. So it just is not something I'm going to do. I don't think it takes that much nuance to get a good sense of who's authentic and who's not out of that group of folks that are doing that. Jocko is authentic. Like, you know, we were at Team 3 together. We were in Iraq together. We you know, he is a beast. He's a savage. He's what you see. My thought when it comes to it is there are people that are, you know, coaches and trainers that can teach you a skill set that they might not even be a master of. I mean, there's people that are fantastic sports coaches and folks that know a program or a system and can teach it. And then there's the folks that really, really did it, and that's where their information and their knowledge is born from. And so I like seeking that person. There's plenty of people I follow that didn't exactly do the skill set or the subject, you know, maybe personally, but they know it so well, they can talk with authority. But when somebody has lived it and says, look, I'm teaching this lesson because that lesson is written in blood. We do this because it didn't work. We threw out everything that didn't. We use the things that do and move forward. So I think he's great. I think it'd be tough to make the list. That's what I would look for, though, to cull through that, is find the people that you believe and can tell have done it and have the respect of their peers, which is not radically hard to you know, call through, and I'd listen to them. Yeah.
Good. Let's go over here. Yeah, right here. Yeah, so the question is, how do we follow up on this? How do we drive it down? How do we, because a lot of times you go to retreats like this, and then it's like into the abyss, okay? I hate to say this, but that's what my next session's about. So there's a theme coming, all right? The next session is about that, okay? About where we're going to go from here. That's a great question. And I think it comes from a place because a lot of us have experienced mountaintop experiences and then an abyss, right? And we're done with that. We're done with that. So it's a great question, right? Yep, right there.
Yeah. So you're going home. Your wife didn't have this experience, but she has a lot of expectations, all right? And good for her. That saves a lot of hopes, right? It feels like pressure, but the same thing, right? How do you begin to unpack your working on your stuff? I want to pass this to Chris first because Chris runs men's retreats all the time, and his last 2-3 hours are, please don't go home and do this, you know, which is what we usually do. Is that close?
Yeah.
Yeah, here you go.
All right, the first thing I want to say is going to sound a little harsher than I mean it, and I think you'll understand the way I mean this, because all of us understand that our wives have expectations of us, and that's her own work, right? Her expectations of you are about her. What kind of man do you want to be? That's your part. How do you feel about her? And how do you want to approach her differently as a husband? That's your work. So her expectations, great, that she can have her expectations. The big thing for you is, do you love your wife? And what kind of man do you want to be for her? And now what steps do you want to take in order to do that? Then go be that man. The one thing, and I say this to men on the weekends that I run also, liminalwork.com.
It's on the website.
Hey, and I'll say this to everybody. When you go home, my big recommendation is you've all got plans. You've all got this vision of like the man that you want to be, the husband that you want to be. And so the first step that men, and the first mistake that I see men taking is they go home and they make all the declarations about how things are going to be different. How are you going to be a different man? What you're going to do differently in this, right? Don't do it. They've heard it all before. And there's actually science behind this also. The more we talk about something, the less chance the chances actually go down about that we're going to follow through and actually take action on it. If there is a man that you want to be, go be that man. Just do it. Eventually, they're going to start to trust it. And if you've got some voices in your ear, like, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing this? It's like, I know, that's really tough. And Jim's going to talk about this a lot more. We're going to keep going back to this next session thing. I know,
I'm writing my session right now in my head.
The hard...
It's getting longer.
And even the way it was asked over here, don't try to go out of this alone. Jim's going to be talking about ways that, you know, the setups that we can do this together as men going forward. But look, everybody up here, I mean, I think if we go down the line, we've all got plans for how men can do life differently and how we can, like, get men together to keep doing this, because it's so important for men to be doing life together. So whenever you're starting to feel down about something, you've got a voice in your ear saying, I'm not doing this right, I can't do this, get the men around you that you trust, that you can talk this stuff through with and build you up. Don't try to do this alone, okay?
Good. Anybody else want to jump in on that one? Very good. Good. Good question, great answer. Yeah, yeah, right back here.
So question is, we're talking about empathy and humility and compassion. If we don't have that naturally, if that doesn't come easy for us or naturally for us, then what do? Do we fake it till we make it as it pertains to our spouses? So a couple answers to your question there. The first is, no, don't fake it till you make it, because it'll come off as disingenuous, and then we're going to have a fight, right? And everybody's feelings are going to be hurt. So don't fake it till you make it. So a couple things that have helped, I'm just talking practically here, a couple things that have helped me in terms of developing empathy for my spouse. One of the biggest things is actually understanding her story, actually knowing that her story, she's today living the sum total of her story. All the bumps and bruises and hurts and happiness along the way comes to today. And so as I've learned to understand her story, and I've found places where my heart breaks for her story, that engenders empathy. Does that make sense? That kind of cracks the nut, if you will, on my heart. The other thing is kind of coming to the realization that the God of the universe looked down on me, looked down on you, and went, hey, Jason, this is my little girl. Her name is Shelley. She's cute, and she's got freckles and pigtails, and I'm entrusting her to you. I'm handing you my little girl to care for, to be a reflection of me for. I'm empowering you. I'm going to walk with you. I want to heal you so I can also heal her. And when I see through that lens, when I look through that lens, it changes the way my heart beats for her. Does that make sense?
Good. Very good.
Jason's a really brilliant man, by the way. One thing that I talk to men about a lot, because there is this learning process that we're going through, especially when it comes to intimacy, and if we haven't experienced that, there's a lot of practice that goes with that also. But the fake it till you make it idea, I like for men to go the exact opposite of that and go to full honesty. So if I'm in a conversation with my wife and I'm struggling in some way, that I'm open and honest saying, I'm struggling right now. Like, this is how I'm feeling. And there's a want piece of this that I think is important. The end result is I want to be close to you and I want to be intimate with you. And I'm feeling frustrated and angry because I'm struggling on how to do that. And even in that honesty, we're moving closer together. Does that make sense? Great.
So, this next session. Right after lunch, if you can stick around. The world's changing, culture's changing, values are changing, yet we're supposed to stand firm in this. How do we interact with culture? Is that what you're saying? Yeah. With endurance, it's already started the first, right? It's not going to be easy. We're in this world, and then we're in this world, but we don't belong to this world. You've heard me teach that before, right? So the natural thing is if I'm in it but not participating in it, I must be against it. And that's where we get crucified. We are known for what we're against, right? And we have to become known for what we're for. I'm not against you. Now, the world, I was talking at breakfast about this. Listen, if you think that you're going to figure the formula that pleases everyone in the room, it doesn't exist, right? And so you have to make a decision. You might get crucified. It happened to our leader. But you have to be in it. And then, like, there are certain groups and types of people that just want to go Old Testament on, you know? And should I say that? I just said it, audience. What I mean is like, yeah, let's just get rid of those, right? We don't say it, I say it out loud, but we all think stuff like that. It's like, but that's not how Christ would treat them. The number one question asked of Christ is, why do you hang out with people like that? It's because he had an agenda to show them what God was like before they ever changed, all right? And let God do the changing, all right? So you probably have some situations in mind, like that you're rubbing up against, how you're supposed to interact with them. You know who you are without apology, but not with in an offensive way, you know? This is what we do. When somebody's different than us, we puff off our chest and say, like, mine's better than yours, or mine's, right, stronger than yours. And that's, you might win the argument, you'll lose the war, right? So I think what we have to do is find. So I wrote a paper on this on my last thing about, like, how do we interact with people that don't believe? And some people just say, well, write them off. Don't throw pearls in front of pigs or give sacred things to dogs because they'll trample them under their feet and chew them to pieces, right? And so people are like, don't waste your time on people like that. They won't change anyway. But the next verse says, how about this? Ask, seek, knock. I think the way to understand, and the best words that I've ever heard in any, and it didn't come from you, counseling, was help me understand, as opposed to why the hell are you doing that? That works with kids, that works with marriage, that works with employees, that works with bosses. Just help me understand, because I don't, and I want to. So when you have somebody in a position where they just have a different value system, it's like what Chris said about our wives. They've been on a journey that ended them here. And everybody has a story. They didn't just make up their belief system and their value system.
This is what it's evolved to, and this is what reality is for them. So if you're against them, then just blow them off. If you care about them, ask, like, how'd you get here? Seek some answers. Ask permission to come into their life. This is a really horrible example, but I was watching Naked and Afraid with my wife, and I always say, let's get naked, and she says, I'm afraid. And that's a true story. You all use that before bedtime tonight. You're welcome for that. But so it's like it's a man and a woman, and they meet in the jungle or the desert or whatever that is, and it's awkward and stuff like that. Except on this episode, the lady was transitioning from a male. So she had a full breast but a penis. And so it was kind of, it's just like, I couldn't turn it off. I'm sorry. It's like, I've got to see this train wreck. And it's like, I don't want to see a train wreck, but if a train's going to wreck, I want to see it, right? And so I'm watching this, and the whole time, I don't remember this person's name, is they're nervous because they know what could happen. And so they meet, Chris, I think, sorry, that's the character's name. Seems right, Pat, I don't know. Anyway, so many jokes. Yeah, I can't. Just can't do that anymore because culture, right?
You just want your editors to have work.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah, they need. Meets a South African guy, and he just called it out. Not what I expected, right? But he said, I don't want to judge you. I want to hear your story. And you could just see the relief. Just the relief come off. I don't know if anything's ever going to change in that person's life. I know what would guarantee it's not. Right? I have transgender people sit at Flatiron's Auditorium every Sunday. I don't know how you get there. Do you? I don't understand that level of thought or brokenness or whatever. It goes, here's a good idea. Right? I do know Jesus looked at his disciples after everybody had left. He says, are you going to leave me too? And the response from Peter was, where else are we going to hear words of life? So if anything is going to change in culture, it's because men like us care about it and try to understand and kind of get inside of it so that from that position of relationship, we're not going to change culture, right? Somebody said something on the way down here. I said, I think they dropped the up on the world is up. And I said, I'm trying to, like, one man at a time. All right? We're not changing the world. We're changing people. All right? And then culture change. Right? Schools change when parents change. Right? And then countries change when schools change. And on it goes. Does that make sense? All right. I'm going to go this side, right there.
So calling is riverbanks. They give you direction. An assignment is the boat that you're going to go down the river in, which is your job or vocation or the thing you might get paid for, the hobbies that sort of flow out of you. So assignment is what and calling is why. So if you're thinking about purpose and direction and riverbanks, that's a sense of calling. It's where I'm headed. And it should connect the dots to all the different assignments, jobs, again, vocation, the thing you get paid for, that, you know, many of us might have 10 or 12 of those throughout our career. And if we don't have that connection point with calling, then we feel a little bit schizophrenic and jumping from thing to thing.
Yeah, so it's how do we go from 0 to 200% and not get discouraged when we're in the gym and we're not seeing progress, I assume? Is that what we're going for? So some of it is understanding, like, where we're starting from, right? A lot of us just go to the gym and start working out and we're like, we're not seeing any progress. We're not seeing any results. But we don't know what we're actually starting with. It's not just a physical element. It is a mental and a spiritual element for many of us, right? The body doesn't go where the mind doesn't take it, but it's also easier to act yourself into feeling than to feel yourself into action. And so to get the ball rolling, it's easier just to get up and start moving. And so for many of us, it's not about even going to the gym because exercise at its core is just movement. It's not strength training. It's not HIIT training. It's just movement. And many of us don't move. We live in a very, very sedentary environment. And so to stay motivated is understanding the target that we're actually going after. And when we hit those plateaus, we need to understand that those plateaus, there's a notch somewhere that we haven't identified. Right? I hit plateaus. Even in bodybuilding, after 18 years, every single year that I would prep for a show was different. It never was the same thing year after year. You know why? I changed. Every year, I improved just a little bit, and that little bit of improvement changes everything with macro, nutrition to the way that I'm training. You know, one year I got really lean with keto, and the next year it was carb cycling. And so everything works. When people ask me like, what diet should I be using or what training program? I'm like, well, it depends. What do you like to eat? Let's build a lifestyle program around it. And for many people, we buy into the marketing of the fad diets or the fad training programs because we want it quick. It's not quick. It's a mental lifestyle change. It's a physical lifestyle change, and it's a spiritual lifestyle change. And it has to be all three. Because when we hit those plateaus physically, it's going to come to the other categories that get us through that roadblock. Good. Does that help?
It's really good.
Let me say something real quick on that. It's a really good question. Yeah, so the question is, what were the expectations for this gathering met or exceeded for all of us who are here to, I guess, be mentors or thought leaders or teachers? And for me, I don't want to show up and just try to give you information or helpful things. I want to pull gold out of you. And a few people that I got to pray for, my man Israel right over here, like there was something locked up in him, right? Sean, I don't know where Sean is. He's around here somewhere, but there he is. Something was locked up. So as Jim just said, just reiterating, macro, we're all thinking about the macro, but micro is where the power is. I want to connect with a person. So all the things in regards to when you look at 400 men gathered for 48 hours, there's some powerful things happening. But the personal conversation, connection, deeply integrated, like point on somebody's heart, and you walk away and you feel like I'm transformed. That's what I'm looking for. Mm.
That's good. Yeah, I would echo that. I think that we leaned into God because he wanted to do something, and we paid attention, and this is it. So, I mean, this is a risk, right? Because it's not a Flatirons event. Flatirons event has a big bank account, right? If it fails, it's like, okay, fail forward, whatever you want to call it, you know? There's a big insurance policy. Like, there's a lot of people that put a lot of skin in the game to be here, right? A lot of hours, a lot of time. And it's like the hope was that we'd create a splash that creates ripples in a movement, but it could have just been a turd. You know, it's like, well... That didn't work, you know? But I don't know. I mean, so to go back to your question, though, from the moment I stood out there at the front gate, I thought this was going to be different. Some of y'all felt it when you pulled in here. Like, there's a sense of anticipation and need. I need this, right? And, so I would say that it's more than exceeded my hopes. Which just shows lack of faith, probably, you know? It's like, but every time I go to one Christmas weekend, I'm like, this one probably won't work. And then about halfway through Saturday, I'm like, it works. And by it, I mean God. So, yeah, thanks. Yeah, right up there. That's been my last 3 years, so I'll let somebody else answer that. Who wants it? Yeah.
As leaders, you know, if a plan wasn't going the way you planned it, how did you work through the problem set? I never saw a plan work once on the battlefield. I mean... Literally, it never went to plan. We built the plan as best we could down to minutia, and we structured it in a way that we would have built every possible contingency into that problem set, and then something would come out of left field that we did not expect. And so I told on the deck the other day, with a smaller group, this concept that I coined when I was running training that I called random acts of instructor violence. And this is when instructors, I got to truncate the story because I don't want to dominate the time, but it's like if the class does exactly what we, or if we tell the class to do something and they don't do it, you pretty much know what's going to happen the rest of that day. It's going to be Armageddon. But we'll tell them to do something sometimes, and they'll do it perfectly, better than we expected, and we'll beat them worse than when they failed. And what happens is somebody will inevitably quit. They'll be like, this isn't fair, and that's the point. The battlefield isn't fair. The acts of violence are random. And you're either the type of person that can do everything right, and it can go catastrophically wrong, and you can keep working the problem, or you're not. So if you're somebody that can do everything right and still fight, you're long for the job that we do. And so that's it. You just keep swinging. I mean, I just don't know. I don't know how you would stop. You know. So just keep working the problem. You just grind.
Yep.
I think. I mean, everybody knows the famous Mike Tyson quote, right? Everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the face. There's something. Just going along with what I said, there are plans that we have that we go into that they just don't seem to be working out. That happens all the time. One of the things that I'll talk to leaders about as I'm mentoring them, I see them hold back because they think they need to have the answer to something before they step into a situation. One of the reasons that we train so much ahead of time, one of the reasons we do the soul work that we do, or we're doing physical work or anything, that we do so much training going into this, is that we know how to act when we're in something so that we can step into chaos without having an answer before we go into it. If you're waiting to have the answer before you step in, it's going to be too late when you step in.
That's good.
So knowing that sometimes you're just going to have to step in knowing you don't have the answer, all the prep work that you've done to get there is going to make it okay when you step in.
Good.
Can I add one more thing?
Yeah.
I don't work in the battlefield. Although sometimes my office is like a battlefield.
It is.
It's true. There's always something to own. There's always something to own. And so when something doesn't go according to plan as it pertains to the, you know, work and marriage and intimacy and those kinds of things, I always have to look at, I'm not above bad things on good days, right? Humility would say, I'm not above bad things on good days. And there's always something to own. So part of recovering from whatever didn't go right is that ownership and humility to look at what's my part and what does God need to work on there?
All right. So the question is, you have three daughters, young. You raise them in a world, it's scary. How do you protect them? How do you lead them? How do you raise them up to be warrior, like warrior women, right? Who wants it? Come on.
I've got three daughters myself. I don't know that this is daughter specific. I think this might be child specific. So I have a story of my own dad, all right? Story of my dad's is when after my parents were married, and you know, my mom was pregnant with my older sister, and my dad freaked out because he didn't know what kind of dad he was gonna be. Because his dad was not a great dad to him. And I remember him telling me this story. I'm going to cry talking about this. That he made a choice. He just said, I am going to screw up as a father. I am going to make bad decisions. But at the end of the day, I am going to make sure my kids know that I love them. And he followed through on that. And if your daughters, you're going to make a lot of choices, right? You're going to try to grow them into warrior women. You're going to be protecting them. You're going to see dangers that they're going to go into. At the end of the day, make sure they know you love them. Because everything else around that, it's going to come out okay if they know that. You know?
That's good. Did I hit for you? Okay. Yep. What?
So the question is, what the heck is intimacy aversion, and where can you learn more about that? So intimacy aversion is a conversation that we had yesterday in one of the breakouts that's rooted in the oldest story in the book that after the fall, what people learn to do, what Adam and Eve learned to do is hide from themselves and from God and from people, from each other, right? Does that make sense? And that's intimacy aversion. I hide from God and myself and from others.
right? And so the trajectory that we're on in developing intimacy and getting closeness and deep connected relationships, my bias is that that's awesome in a marriage and it's really beautiful. And it's also really hard to do if you're not in community with men. And I'll say for myself, learning to do intimacy, dropping my arms and letting people close, happened more with men than it did with my wife. And the reason for that is because their wounds didn't hurt the same way. Does that make sense? Their wounds didn't hurt the same way. They could look me in the face and go, "You're messed up. What you've done is sick and gross, and we love you." My wife couldn't do that in some of our process, if that makes sense. That's not a knock on her. Everybody follow me, right? So when I go back to you, okay, where do you read about that? I don't know. I don't have a book to recommend for you. What I can tell you is experientially, putting yourself in that posture of humility in the community of other men like these, okay, so you need a new small group. And then in the context of that small group, what we've talked about all weekend that every speaker has mentioned on some level is 100% vulnerability being known, the good, the bad, the ugly, no more secrets, right? That's how you change the intimacy aversion.
No, that's all right. Just to add on to one thing he said, because it's a really brilliant thing. The problem is, so in order to be intimate, we have to be vulnerable, right? And I think everyone in the room has had an experience of, and when I've been vulnerable, I've been hurt. And so there is a risk to being vulnerable, which when we take that the next step, there is a risk to intimacy. And I really love the answer. Like, I don't know if there's a book around that. Matter of fact, if there was a book around that, I don't know if it would help, because it's work. It's something we have to experience, something we have to do. It's not something we can read about or think about. But taking small steps in less risky spaces. So, I completely agree. It's going to be safer to do this with men before stepping in with a wife to be able to do this, except men have hurt me around this too. So finding the right men and the safe men and the right environment to do it, where we have some kind of controlled environment, like a small group where we work with those kind of things, it's going to be important to practice that and take small steps into intimacy too.
Can I get an example of when I was heading the right direction with my kids and what that looked like?
In connecting
with them. Yeah. I have daughters as well. I was talking to one of my teammates, one of my brothers, right before we got up on stage, and we were talking about sort of messing up in the process of being perfect and somehow expecting that, you know, from our kiddos or wanting them to achieve some level of perfection. In our household, it's a real challenge. Hopefully I say this humbly, but I've been a pretty high performer. My bride is a very high performer, and I think our daughters are feeling the weight of that. And we've just come, particularly during COVID, we really kind of realized, both she and I, that we're kind of island. I'm very introverted. I mean, I love spending time with people that want to be in a moment and be in a ring. I'm always game for that in general. I like a lot of time alone as well. Consequently, I'll metabolize, digest, and work through problems on my own. And I realized my best partner in crime, I'm not sharing that with. That was my bride. And I don't think we're horrific about it, but we got much, much better at it recently. I mean, a quantum shift. And so now we've just kind of recognized that probably the best thing we can share with our daughters are our shortcomings and our failings. I think that's going to take them across the line. Like, my daughter had like a real tough time at dance or something like that. She wasn't getting something. That same morning at jiu-jitsu, I left the ring fully crying, like in tears, felt absolutely incapable. I've won more fights than I've lost in my life. I was just like, I don't know if I'm in the right place, but consequently, like, I literally hate it, so I'm in the right place. But she's getting teared up talking about it, and then I was like, time to share. And so I did too, and told her, I was like, I'm failing just the same right now. And it was magic, you know? So I think it's sharing that. I think it's, you know, the way I started yesterday with James saying, I don't know shit, none of us know shit. And be okay with that and do your best. Yeah.
Yep. That should be in the Bible. Yep. And he's from D.C. So he's like Washington, D.C. Yeah, he's in deep, so there you go.
Yeah, so just make
we
sure
love you and hate you. I don't, you know, it's like.
Just so we repeat the question, how do we, you know, you're not on a literal battlefield like I was on a literal battlefield, but how do we share our faith in the current climate, in the current world, move forward? I'll answer just a small part of that, and I'll give it to people that are far better prepared to answer the second part. You said, you know, we're not literally on the battlefield. The easiest place I ever existed in my life was on the battlefield. I assure you, your daily life, my daily life, is significantly harder. I wasn't worried about my phone bill. I wasn't worried about a doctor's appointment. I didn't care about the cable. A pipe wasn't going to break. That was a problem for me. All I had to focus on was my job, the person on my right and left, and the mission that we need to achieve on behalf of the country. Simplest place I ever was. Least stressful environment I've ever been in. So don't think for a second my life on the battlefield was radically more hard than your life is right now. You're in a tougher battlefield than I was on in Iraq and Afghanistan. No doubt about it. As far as the showing the faith, I'm going to leave that to the pros.
You want to jump in, Brett?
There's a great quote by, I think it's St. Francis,
yeah,
right, of Assisi. Mm-hmm. Preach the gospel at all times, and if necessary, what?
Use words.
Yeah. So be the best in the world at what you do, period. Be the best in the world. So many of us as Christians, as Jesus followers, walking into the public square are settling for average because we have good intentions, but we're not willing to be the best in the world. And when we are the best in the world, people will say, hey, tell me more about why you're so focused on being the best in the world. So if our actions, the way we approach our work, if the way we treat people is now a testimony, then we don't have to figure it out. You know, a lot of friends have Bible verses everywhere on their in their cube, and they're just waiting for somebody to come by so they can just machine gun them with the 77 Bibles that they have to hand out. And that person coming by is just looking at you going, would you just please get your work done in a way that is actually going to honor our company? And maybe at some point I might come back and sit down with you and let's have a conversation about this stuff you believe. But until then, I have no interest.
That's good. Here's the thing. I got a bunch of guys that grew up in my youth group here this weekend. It's like it's been memory lane, except for one of them. I wish he wasn't here. But yeah. Anyway, so I was a youth pastor for 22 years. All right, and Robin had a lot of health problems. That means I'm taking kids with me. Okay, so I took kids on spring break trip. Sounds glamorous, all right? I got 700 kids at the beach and kids, right? It wasn't vacation. It was chaos management and trying to not create more human beings, you know. This is their high school kids, all right? It's like, no. But Robin and I had Jordan and Allie with us on all those things, okay? And those kids were watching me. They're watching me put Jordan over my shoulder. Carry him up to the hotel room. Can't do this. I'm gonna build a sandcastle right now over here. Or come on, Jordan, you're gonna go to this conference with me. So I think I've preached, I don't know how many thousands of sermons. Here's one of my favorite ones. I'm in an elevator in Destin, Florida, and this guy, this high school kid who has a very rough home, looks at me and goes, "I want to be a dad like you." Okay. I did not teach about fatherhood in high school youth group, right? He caught it. They're watching us. And it's not just from a critical, cultural, trying to tear us down, although that happens. They're watching, you're different. Your marriage is different, right? You hang up the phone and say, "I love you," to your son. My dad didn't do that. Well, my dad did, but you know what I'm saying? They're watching. I love that. Be the best. And most of us have, that's not even on our radar. I'm gonna do good, but this isn't really what I'm passionate about, so I'll just, right? And the whole world goes like, those people are average. Those people don't show up on time. Listen, just because you put an ichthus on the back of your service van or on your business card, I'll probably avoid you. Right? Because I'm like, you're going to play the, well, we're all brothers in Christ, so I can do shitty labor. Not in my house. Right? So if you're going to put that ichthus on your whatever, right?
represent Christ well, or take it off. Okay, does that make sense? In the back. So you're working in kids' ministry at your church, but to somebody else's kids and grandkids, what are you allowed? So yeah, so you're running into, so you've run into pronouns, like, even in church kids' ministry. I guess I'm the only one up here that, right? So I speak for Flatirons. We have a lot of gay men and women, couples, transgender, they come to Flatirons, right? I don't change my message. And they know that their lives are in tension with what I'm teaching. I've never had a gay person ask me to change. They acknowledge, I know my life is in tension with that. Don't change it. You know, I'll wrestle through the tension, but I'm getting so much out of the rest of it. Okay? And I think there's an understanding that when you come into, so when you guys come into this, most of you knew it was a faith-based, but even if you didn't, it's a faith-based organization, and we're going to talk about from that lens. So I would say, you know, if someone's challenged you on a pronoun at church, right, you could hold on to, well, here's our understanding of God's word. Can we have a conversation about it? You know, you're not going to undermine them. You're not going to say, you're wrong. It's not a time for a sermon. It's like, can we have a conversation about it? And if it's above your, like, authority, right, then you pull a staff person in to help you find the words for that, all right? But it's always, listen, you're welcome here. We're glad you're here. This is our understanding of God's word. And everybody in this room has tensions with parts of God's word, right? Wish that page wasn't in there, right? The ones that get all the attention right now culturally are, right, gender and politics and, you know, that type of thing. So I think it is, approach them with, hey, I'm glad you're here. This is my understanding of God's word. Can we have a conversation about it? Does that make sense? All right. Yeah, all the way in the back. Yeah, so you're wired up. You go 0 or 100. You have too many projects going. A lot of plate spinning. You take on too much. How do you take now all you've learned here on top of that? On the spiritual side, yeah. Can we get the ruck talk again? Yeah, I mean, really, just bring that back.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Jim's asking is about the, you know, ruck, like how much you're carrying. And I'll expand on it a little bit. One of the best things I learned from one of my snipers, this is a much bigger story, I'll tell it next time we do this weekend.
Next year, I heard next year.
Next year.
That's what I heard. Just heard.
100%, for sure. Hopefully we have something before that.
All right.
But one of the best things I learned from one of my snipers is we were picking apart a hillside in Afghanistan trying to figure out where Taliban were coming down to set roadside bombs and launch ambushes on friendly forces. And I was looking at this hillside, and he started seeing stuff that I just couldn't believe. Every 10 minutes, he'd tell me something new that was of note that I didn't see, using the same pair of binoculars he had, the same spotting scope, and the same training. It's pissing me off. We get done with the mission. A couple of the bad guys came in and we dropped bombs on them, and that we ruined their afternoon. And then when we came back, we're cleaning our weapon system. I've done my after action report. I'm coming back in to clean our gear, and he's in the room. He can tell I'm pissed off. He's like, "What's going on with you?" And I said, "I'm a little irritated that I have the exact same training, the exact same binos, same power. You're seeing everything on this hillside, and I'm not seeing anything." He's like, "I got you." He said, "Let me ask you something. Are you looking at the whole hillside?" I was like, "Of course." He's like, "That's your problem. It's too much information to digest. You got to break it down into smaller chunks." So I use a grid. And now as a hunter, I do this all the time. I'll grid a section or an area that I'm looking at, and I'll burn into each individual grid, and I'll give it true attention. If I see something to note, I mark it. If I don't, I move on to the next grid. And then right before he leaves the room, he says, "Boss, if you look at less, you'll see more." Drops the mic, walks out of the room. Super annoying. Super annoying.
Yeah. And that's kind of what we learned with all those numbers on that page yesterday, right? It's overwhelming, overwhelming. And then you go, oh, right? And then you get a pattern going. So, yeah.
I touched on this a little bit yesterday in looking at your tribe, your entourage, right? Who are the men, who are the women? Doesn't have, I mean, we have men here, but in my life, I have a lot of women as well. You know, I've got my mom, my sisters are very strong, powerful personalities. And I think it comes down to who's your entourage, right? And when shit hit the fan for me in 2015 and we lost our business and the IRS seized our bank accounts, I mean, it was a total shit show. The entourage that I had built ran for the hills. They wanted nothing to do with the problems that I was facing, and I felt like absolutely alone. There was two people in my life that I could reach for, and one of those was my wife, who just finally had enough and ripped the sheets off and, you know, and threw the laptop on me and said, figure it out. You've got to put it back together, and you have to remember that when you don't believe in the shitstorm that you're in because it's just overwhelming, it's wave after wave after wave after wave, you have to have strong people around you. And so be very intentional about giving before you get. And I love using that phrase because a lot of us showed up this weekend to see, what could I get from this weekend? What could I get from this weekend? But a handful of us showed up to go, what could I give? Even just being a participant, what could I give to the man in my bunk next to me? And that, I think, changed the perspective for me when those hard times happened, when those Mayday moments happened, I realized, you know what? I wasn't there for the people around me either because I had so much important other stuff to do. And so I think it becomes down to intentionality on intentionally putting together the right team of people around you.
That's good.
Really good, Matt. I'll just 20 seconds. Who are your eight?
That's it.
Who are your eight? Who are the eight people that are going to carry your casket?
Yeah. Bam.
I've never called Mayday yet, but what I'll tell you is we had something on the battlefield that's called Troops in Contact. So people that have served know what I'm talking about. If you're in a fight and you need support, you can call Troops in Contact, and that kind of alerts everybody to come in and you know, a quick reaction for somebody's to come back you up. I had a Marine aviator, a jet pilot, that actually was with us as a communicator on the ground, and we got in a legit gunfight by most standards, not something that we needed help to advance the ball. And he was my radio man. He called Troops in Contact, and I knocked the radio out of his hand. He thought I was going to kill him. I was like, we are not Troops in Contact. The way I see that is if I call that, that means I cannot advance our position or solve this problem with who I have right here. I just had the blessing of always having the people around me that could solve the problem with me. And so I just surround yourself with people that can solve the problem so you don't have to call Mayday.
That's good. Let me go back to what Brad said. I heard him say that at a retreat we did several months ago, who are your eight, and it got me thinking, right? And I thought, I think I can come up with three, and the rest work for me. And that was a really moment. It's like, I'm rebuilding that team right now. I totally trust the elders in my life. I trust my wife. I'm trying to trust other people. Like, who's your 3 o'clock in the morning person? Like, if Mayday, you know, I need help, all right? I have a few guys. The other thing I think is a misnomer to think that there's going to be 50. You're going to have 50 deep friendships. No, you're not. It's an illusion, right? You can be part of a community of 50. You can be part of a group of 50, something like that. But to say, to know and be known, like, these are the men are going to show up. Right, those are few and far between. When I was at my deepest, darkest point, James Henderson in Mexico City, he looked at me and he said, "I don't care what you've done, I'm here." Right, and he cared what I'd done. It wasn't a deal killer on our relationship. Does that make sense? So those are few, very few and far between. Do you guys want to add to that? Yep. Then we got one more, and then we're gonna wrap it up.
That's not fair, because James is on my list too, by the way. But that's so I've got my guys. The thing I really want to ask as you are assembling your own team, and this kind of goes to what you were saying down here, is how are you doing life with them now, before you get to Mayday? Because if you're keeping things surfacey with men and just kind of keeping things up here, and then you get to Mayday, you're not gonna know if they're gonna be there or not. So when you're getting together with them now, are you going to those depths so you know, oh, no, we've already been there. So I know when I get to that Mayday point that these are the men for me because they've already been there for me. So practice that now. Do that with men now so you know what kind of men you have around you, all right?
It's really good.
Yeah, the questions about calm is contagious and where my mind goes to, you know, live that. I think it's a tremendous amount of practice. I mean, we people ask, you know, somebody said earlier, you know, I want to be a man and whatever the vision is, you know, if you want to be hard, you got to do hard things. You're not going to not do hard things and become hard.
Write that down.
So you got to practice. You just got to practice. So for calm is contagious, you got to get in the storm a little bit and then exercise it. You know, the only thing we'd fire a young tactical commander for is not doing anything. Like if they made a bad call but did it with a little bit of like panache and some aggression, we'd be like, all right, we can fix that. If you don't make a call when the bullets are flying, you're not long for it. You can't do our job. You have to make a call. We favor action over inaction. So you have to be doing something. So that's it. Practice. And I'd like to believe I had it in all the times I needed it. And, you know, we'll see. I'm as good as my next fight that's coming up. We'll see.
Yeah, we got to wrap it up. This has been great. And if you have more questions, I'll tell you in the next session ways that you can get those answered. But this is really, really great. So to those that are listening through the podcast, do you think that men across the world maybe ought to come to this next time? What do you guys think?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, thanks. We're good. Awesome.